So we are back for part three of Pathmakers and Pioneers, our podcast that's going over looking at how we as arts and heritage industry members function and work through the organisations and the industries and the institutions that we interact with. So today, put my glasses on. It's one that I'm quite interested in and always have been, and I think it's really important for what we do. I don't know whether for everybody, because I'm not sure this one hits you so much. In what ways can the arts and heritage sector collaborate to provide Black British artists and historians with greater access to funding and archival resources, enabling them to pave the way for future generations? Now, this is something that has kind of been the stop and start of my life for since I've been freelancing for the past 20 plus years, created my own organization in 2016, and I had smaller organizations, and then you move on and whatsoever, but always really worked for myself. So funding's been a massive part of it. And although as an organisation now, we're an NPO organisation, so we have core funding from the Arts Council throughout the year, it's still a problem, because one of the things that they told us when we did our, put our application in, was Black organisations don't ask for enough. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I knew it wasn't enough, but it was like, I don't want to ask too much. I don't want to do that. Which has left us in a position where we are expected to do A, B, and C, but we haven't actually got enough money to do A, B, and C. So I'm still looking for funding. And it's, as a Black organisation, it's like, you only tick this box, you only tick that box, and the things we do, we kind of have to tick those boxes, which has always been a real problem for me. So what are your thoughts? How are you navigating through that?
Again, looking at me. I think in terms of that whole funding regimes and accessibility and success rate and likelihood of success and the energy that you put into writing funding bids, because that's a whole thing in itself.
Yep.
I think one of the key things for myself and Don Cameron, who I've worked with for different organisations and different projects, has been to be very clear about what the project is. Of course, you can have a great idea, but what is it? Who's it going to reach? What's it going to say? How are you going to reach them? Those are the questions we're going to be asked. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about projects, not NPO applications now. Another one is to create a relationship with the funders. Really, really key. So that somebody can understand in that funding organization where you're coming from, what your idea, what your project is about, what you're about as a producer as well, and also as a resource, which is what relationship managers are there to do. I think in terms of creating projects, look, you can have some that organically just come as brilliant ideas, a light bulb moment, and that has happened, and quite often they work. But also to really dig down and do the research around, is it welcome? Is it wanted by the audiences you want to reach? And that audience engagement is so, so important. If you haven't got that, then there's no point. There's no point, because who's going to see it? Mm. Who's going to experience it? How are they going to experience it? So there's that. I think that gauging the right amount of what we need, I think quite often we normalize, or because we've become used to working with small budgets, haven't we? And that's a problem. And quite often, and I know I've done this, in terms of what I deliver as a producer, kind of made that smaller so it can reach what we're supposed to reach. Mm. And so we can fit in other things. It's, I'll take a hit. Or this role can take a hit. So that we can, because it's really important that this is done. But then what
Cassie
we do is
took
to make
me under.
Yeah, yeah,
literally.
Yeah, yeah. So there is that. But I think one of the key things, aside from the, if you look at it as partnerships, there's partnerships with the audiences, with the communities that you want to reach and perhaps inform the projects and have some role in that as well, and in terms of the evaluation. But in terms of that leverage and that access to funding, for me, it's very much about partnerships and looking at what those partnerships are. Because it's all right to have a relationship, a partnership relationship that is around in kind, offering of whether it's a venue space or that might be staff time or expertise from a museum, a gallery, a library, and so on. And all of that can be really, really useful, helpful, a theatre space as well. Mm. But there's also something to be said, and all of that is really welcome and necessary, the in-kind side of things. But there is also something to be said, where possible, for those partners to invest financially as well in there. So, you know, match funding. And that's where a lot of the problems arise and the challenges arise for us writing those bids, because it's the match funding, cash match funding, that can be difficult. Because, you know, you might be restricted within lottery funded grants. So it means you can't offset one against the other.
Yeah.
So therefore you have to go outside of that. Then is that sponsorship? And that's a different proposal. And a whole different thing. And so it's about looking at those things, and I think that's where there are challenges, and, you know, looking at working with trusts and foundations that are out there, and so on. So that I think it's relationship building, essentially, as well as having a good idea. Yeah. And then in terms of, I think also being unafraid to look at how we reach people, and how we've always reached people isn't always going to be the best way. I think particularly in engaging with younger audiences, if that's not your specialism, then get to work with somebody that can do that.
If
that means looking at digital platforms and social media and so on, then get to work with the people that are doing that really well, that kind of thing, and explore those avenues as well. I think that's essential, and I think it's going to be critical if we are going to do that thing that we've been looking at in the last, you know, episodes around how do we engage, you know, for the future. As well. So that's my very big nutshell take.
Mm-hmm. Well, I, to be honest with you, I mean, I don't work in the field in the way you work in it. Mm-hmm. I come from a different mm-hmm. angle, but I used to be quite, I was going to say, use a big word, like reticent, yeah? but I just used to be backwards and coming forwards for money, right? Because, you know, you have a wonderful idea and everything. And what changed me, I went to America, right, to the African American Museum, mm-hmm. right? Started chatting to the people in there, and they said, how much is this then, man? This must be like 50,000 or 100,000, right? And I was thinking, I wasn't even thinking about money. I was just glad that I got into the room and someone was listening, right? Mm-hmm. And when I kind of mixed with some of the people in Atlanta as well, money was just right up there straight away. Before you even talk about anything, there's how much money you got on the table. So yeah. I kind of took that back with me. So when I go to look at things now, right? Yeah, I know you shouldn't think about money first. That's pretty, but no, I do, right? Because what I think about is, you've probably all been through it. You know, those like long evenings where maybe you can't spend time with your family, okay? And you're doing all these extra hours. So I think to myself, okay, I'm going to have to lose some time with my family and lose all these things to do this thing. So what is that actually worth, all right? So, like, generally, whenever I go in for anything, I go in for 50 times what it's worth, what I think, you know. I think what my initial feeling is about it, which is like a Tom and Jerry, it's a small thing normally, is there. And I always think, okay, you've got to ask for 10 times that. Because we mentioned yesterday.
I need to learn from you guys, I'm telling you.
Well, it's a different thing when you're applying to the Arts Council and Heritage Fund. It's very clear. In fact, some of the relationships that you form with funders, they may tell you, aim for this.
And
for this ballpark.
Exactly.
For some funders, that's because they know. That's because they know. And as that relationship builds up, I don't think it's necessarily that they're trying to say, no, you're not deserving of bigger amounts. You know, I think those relationships are really, really important. And I think as well, in, you know, I've been to the States and looked at, you know, their funding models are different to ours. Mm. There's so many, you know, very rich foundations and benefactors and, you know, fundraising events where you know, a ticket is $1,000 and things like that. It's a different premise here that we have to deal with.
But no, I think what I picked up from there is that the, because it's a moment of different history they've got there and everything, and the position African Americans have within that society, is that there's an assumption, right, there's just money up front here, okay? Right? We're having the money conversation. We'll have the conversation about the art and everything, but we're not going to leave this the money thing on the back burner, right? And I think it's partly cultural here as well. Because in Britain, you don't just start talking about money with people, do you? It's considered a bit grubby, right? If you start, right? But I think, well, my attitude is, I start talking about the money almost near enough straight away, all right? And I try and, because what is, I've worked on projects similar that have almost taken me under sometimes, in the sense that, and I've worked on projects sometimes that I've done it like 15 years ago and it's still up there now, right? There's one project I worked on, it generated £2 million. I found that after, by accident, right? Yeah. Somebody, and I thought, hang on, I've got nothing of that. Yeah. There might times I could have gone to the car, and I thought all the places I could have gone to, I could have gone to New York, so I thought, no, right. So from there, I just said to myself, okay, I'm not even asking for the moon. It goes back to what we were saying yesterday about what is the value of this thing that you've got here. Now, if you sit down and you think, you know what? This thing is probably worth millions, you know, in monetary terms. Well, let's even get to culturally, millions, right? So how am I going to present that? And I think sometimes, I think for myself, is that sometimes you don't know how you look to other people, right? So sometimes, before I never, I wouldn't mention The Guardian or anything, right? Because I'm Mr. Humble Pie, yeah? I am just humbly coming up, right? But now I just say, right, I did this thing in The Guardian, I did this thing in the British Library, right? Because what people think is, right, you've got a massive thing behind you, right? Which sometimes you haven't. But if you can kind of give, it's not an impression, but sometimes we haven't got the big organisation behind you, have you, right? It's just you, a cat, and in a room, right? Something up, right? But that is not how now, but that is not how people see it. No, but right, it's, but sometimes it's, yeah. But you know, but sometimes when people look at the work we've done, it doesn't look like that. Actually, it can't, it looks like it's a massive organisation that's done it, because what we tend to do is, and I think it's partly because of the way things are developed in this country, so we do the work of like 5 or 10 people, you know? Yeah. But right, okay? So right, so, The thing is just to sit down and you get that rising thing in your throat when you ask for the money, all right? The reason why I've broken out of that is because there's been so many times I've done stuff and I think somebody paid for probably their kid's private school education off that, okay, all right? Somebody's probably standing in the Caribbean off what I've done there. So I haven't got, I'd rather just be told to like get out of the room, yeah? Get the hell out, right? We don't want to see your face again, right? Than be, I do something and then, because I've done it so many times, I have done that so many times where I've worked on something, it's wonderful, and then I've got like £50 at the end of it. And I've literally spent it in Costa that afternoon.
That's what made me open up for myself. In all honesty, that's the exact reason, because I was doing freelance projects. I was going into spaces and I was saying, look, I've got this fabulous idea.
Yeah.
It's going to work, but I'm not an organisation. But I can do this for your organisation. I'll write the bid for you. Yeah. I'll do this and this, and like do it all. And I'd either get, say, out of all of it, like a small amount, even though I've done everything, but it goes into their account. So then you have to put in your invoice to them, even though you've done it.
Yeah.
Or, and then stand at the end and they go, look how wonderful we've done. Look what we've done here. And not even say, thank you, Tara, for bringing, and I'd just be stood there going, oh, this one again. Right, okay. And I just got so annoyed with it. I thought, no, I'm opening up. I'm opening up for myself.
Well, look, I mean, sometimes you have to go and be at the dark side of the force here. Okay. Right. There is a way that people know sometimes, right, that you're not giving you a diversity award. I do accept them, right? But sometimes I just like £100,000. I like the recognition. But I think that's what I was talking about, yesterday about the deficit, working from the deficit sometimes. So sometimes you're like, wow, thank you. Thank you, sir, for saying my work was really good. Right. When really, what you should be thinking to yourself is, okay, there's got to be a bank account element to this, right? You look at people doing similar work to you, and you think, and I just saw that guy in a Lamborghini, but Andrew Tate keeps on saying that, but a fast car, right? Or something, right? And you think, hang on a minute, how comes I'm doing the same thing to that person, and I can't actually afford, I'm thinking about buying something in Costa Coffee, when I'm actually having to think about it, right? And yet I can walk out of here, walk into a major institution and see myself up there, right? So I think there needs to be a conversation about self-esteem, actual self-esteem, in ourselves. And as I was saying yesterday or the day before, we need to work together. a little bit so that we can back each other up sometimes, right? Okay? Yes, can I just say one other thing? I don't mind if you're making an application, right? You know, I've done stuff with The Guardian. I don't mind if you throw my name in there, you know? So they just think, okay, the you know, it's... And I think in America, that's what I found in America a little bit.
So that's the problem.
Yeah.
So we know that that's the problem. Yeah. So where is the solution? How do those organisations assist us or support us to be able to get those funding? Because we know that those organisations that you're talking about, they get all the funding that they need.
Yeah.
You know, we're the ones that are kind of scratching around the pool for the rest of it. I mean, to be fair, now we've, as an organisation, got to MPO status, it is slightly easier for us, but we've had to get to that stage. So for all the ones that are coming up, how do we support them? How do, you know, I know what I do. I will help write funding applications and I will, you know, support. If anybody comes to me and asks me for anything, I will always support. And I'll continue doing that. But there are bigger organisations that can support more, like the things that you're saying, creating those partnership deals, creating those things. But how do we make it a necessity? Is it possible? You know, is it something where we have to create a quota where they assist so many organisations within the global majority? You know, I don't know. I'm just kind of...
But then is it, if we're going to talk about quotas, and I'm not
disparaging it. I was just throwing things out.
It's who creates the boundaries for those organisations to exist? And the answer is their lead funders. And so, you know, when it was the creative case for diversity, for example, that's something that they have to tick, and all the investment principles have to be not just box ticks, but box ticked, but also addressed in meaningful ways as well. Mm. So there's that side of things that funders insist on for good reason. There are also, you know, the limits within which they can apply, you know, and what that means for funding. So whether a bid is under 100,000 or under 15, or, you know, what that means for each level of funding. But I think, I really do think that in terms of the partnerships, that's where it is. I think it's the partnerships that are brokered. I think it's being really value centered as well. And I say that, and I'm not speaking about an individual level. I'm speaking about that quite often the projects that we create, we don't always value what they bring to those established organizations. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been told by funders, make sure you get across that the value you bring to the efforts that these organizations and institutions are, you know, what they're doing, because what you're doing is either what they're supposed to be doing or it's enhancing what they are planning to do and so on. And it's really about being very, very determined and intentional about not forgetting that, because it's because quite often these are big established galleries and organisations, and we're either one freelancer or one tiny organisation. I think that's really important to understand that, because there's going to be a power dynamic. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a power dynamic.
Did you finish?
No, it's fine.
Yeah, I think that's been a really constant thread through this whole conversation is that value that we have on each other or ourselves, that we... you know, knowing our value, understanding our worth, and how we then communicate that to either the funders, the organisations, the institutions, or whatsoever. There's been a clear path through the conversation of all part one, part two, part three, which has been really interesting. How do you feel about...
I've never actually physically applied for funding before, so I've only ever seen it from the funding's already secured and then being brought on board as a part of 10 members to kind of execute the funding. And from my personal experience, it was in Brixton. It was to commemorate the 40 years since the Brixton riots. And what's really interesting is with this particular project, the whole reason why it was created was to allow the future, i.e. people, the present day, to be able to ask the organization who had already acquired the funds to get funds from us. And the reason why they kind of removed that barrier is because of that reason of kind of bid making. You know, not everyone would be super proficient in able to make a bid, especially those, you know, from Brixton Riots. And, you know, some of them will be super intellectual scholars, etc. And then on the other hand, you'll have those perhaps that, you know, haven't got that education and aren't able to make those bids. But what's really interesting is within that experience, I, bearing in mind, obviously, we're talking about, you know, paving the way for the future. What I saw was a lot of mismanagement of funds, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. What I saw was, but I mean mismanagement, I mean like sometimes the money was, sorry, in one circumstance, the money was given to a white organization to tell a black story. Mm-hmm. And they were given the majority of the money and then the contributors were black and they were given pittance. Yeah. But because there was an established, you know, in what they were doing in regards to telling a story, yeah. They were chosen, and then, like I said, the contributors were paid very little. And my whole experience, and the reason why I share that, is because my experience in regards to the idea of acquiring funds and then the funds being given out to the community and then the funds being executed to kind of show an art or exhibition or mural or something culturally to commemorate the Brixton Riots felt for me really, I don't know if this is just a personal experience and maybe others can kind of weigh in, but it just wasn't an overall positive experience. And I hope that that is just a one-off, because what I wouldn't want is for that to put a bad taste in the mouth of the funders and then a bad taste in the mouth for the community and a bad taste in the mouth for just everybody involved. And
unfortunately, it is a familiar story.
Yeah.
It's a very familiar story.
So I feel like there's like a reality that isn't being spoken about when it comes to not only the reality of applying for funding, but then once you get it, how are you spending it? How is it benefiting and uplifting and all those kind of things that then come with that?
When you speak about that mismanagement side of things, it almost strays into other realities as well. And some of that is around perceptions of funding. For community groups, organisations, individuals who are just not of that funding world. And so there may have been a time donkeys years ago when it was, you do this, I'm going to pay you a £50, just give me a receipt. There's a whole, it's a whole different ball game about use of public money, public funding, about transparency, about accountability, which, you know, obviously you're aware of, but it's how you balance that with including people who are not used to that set of, you know, those parameters as well, and what that means. I think there's also something to be said about, you know, the things that you were talking about, Tara, around, you know, there's writing bids for organizations, but there's also looking at enhancing the capacity within those organizations, not just to write funding bids, but to deliver the projects behind them as well. And whether that means building it into the bids for the organization, whether that means bringing in expertise, freelance expertise, but also whether that also means assigning part of funding bids for organizational development as well. Otherwise, they're not going to survive.
And that's something that is only, I mean, I've been doing this for so many years, but it's something that I'm only just really working out now. So it's, you know, the one thing, the conversation I've been having just recently is we can't allow the younger members of our community to not hit the nail on the head until they get to 50, you know, and really that's, I'm not saying that, you know, that's, I've only just got anywhere, because obviously I've had a long career, but it's been a kind of a long, steady walk. I've broken up. I can't sit back and allow that to happen to the younger members. We have to be implementing this information from a very early age, or from you know, as soon as they come onto that ladder. And I know, as an organisation dealing with arts and heritage, writing funding bids is not what we do. Business is not what we do. But when we're sitting there writing an application, it is business. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that we're familiar with. We're creatives.
I think we've had to become
writers.
Yeah, and I think most of us start out as creatives, and then in order for the projects to happen,
you have to become.
Yeah. And there, and listen, there are people out there who do just that, do bid writing and development.
Yeah. But then they want to take 20% of your bid, so
you know. Or but then it's a skill that either we don't have or that we don't want to. Do you see what I mean? It's difficult. I think the other thing is around governance as well, because you know, having a constitution, having you know, governing documents, if you're an organization as opposed to an individual applying for funds, all these things people need to get to know, because they are essential. It's publicly funded projects. And the final thing I'd say in terms of that as well is, you know, quite often I hear, and I think we've all heard this, we need to stop relying on, you know, whichever public funder. We need to get our own money together and we need to do this. The truth is, National Lottery funded money is our money.
Just like,
and every time you buy a lottery ticket and all that, and I'm not here touting for the lottery here. I'm just saying that we need to understand that that's our money as well. And it would be great to have private investment and private investment from within our communities as well. But, you know, it is our money.
Definitely.
Public money. We are the public.
So that being said, because you're 100% right, you know, organisations, as we grow, we need to have an understanding. Even as individuals, you need to have an understanding of the governance and, you know, what you're, you know, even as an individual freelancer, when you're at some point, you're going to have to put your taxes in. You're going to have to understand all of those bits in the background. Is it us as Black organisations and individuals, is it our responsibility to inform the young ones, to get that information to them? Or is it those institutions? Is it the universities? Where does, because it, we know that it's something that's needed, but where does it land?
Well, I don't think,
because otherwise we're just talking.
Yeah, I don't think you can depend on those institutions to do that, right? Because when they don't understand literally what it is we're talking about sometimes. And also, the reason why I see partly it's my responsibility to do that for younger people is there are extra things that they might have to deal with that other people wouldn't have to deal with, right? So just give example, right? Sometimes I've got money, not in the way you've got money, all right, okay? I've just been given, I haven't written anything out, yeah, okay? All I've done is, and some people might be watching this thinking, hang on, and next time I see Gavin, I'm going to ask him back for that money, right? But what I've done is, I've, you know, I know kind of how I appear on my CV, right? Okay. I know how I can appear, right? So like I've asked for a certain amount of money, right? I've asked for like, not really a lot of money. In fact, a lot of money we're talking about here is not like a lot of money, is it really, right?
I don't know what you're talking about. Well, you're telling me, think about it, and plus it by 50, so I don't know.
To me, it's like millions upon millions, a lot of money, right? Okay, if you're talking to about £50,000, that is good money, but it's not a lot of money compared to a lot of the things you see going on. But anyway, that's another conversation, right, that we can have. But I kind of sat down there, and sometimes there's specific issues you deal with as a Black person working with people, right? So sometimes I've managed to get a budget on something and then I'm working with somebody and you're questionable about things. I'm happy to be questioned, right? I'm not a megalomaniac. I'm not saying, listen, I've got the money, you do what I blasted will say, right? Not like that at all. But then, because I remember working on a thing about Toussaint Louverture, and I asked this guy just to draw something, and he went on Google, had a look at Toussaint Louverture, and said, this guy's a dictator. Yeah, this guy's a da-da-da-da. Do you know anything about this guy? And I'm thinking, no, actually, I'm a historian. Yeah, actually, I do know something about this guy, and I asked you to draw something specific for me. I said to him, listen, I didn't ask you for your historical opinion, right? And we got into a weird conversation. I just said to him in the end, look, because it was weird, right? And, you know, there's a bit of me saying, hang on, if someone want me to class clown,
it's even challenging. Challenge.
Right, right. So, and these are the kind of things that can drop your blood pressure, right? Because you're actually having to have extra conversations about, frankly, nonsense, right? It's just nonsense, right? And then, so there's that element. So there's extra friction that you might have to deal with, right? And that's where our experience becomes important to say, right, there's ways you deal with that friction, right? There's no point completely losing with the person on the phone and say, listen, you blasted well, you wouldn't do that if I was, right? There's no point in doing that. It's, you go through the argument and then you just in the end you say, listen, this is no longer a conversation, all right? If you can't handle this thing, or you can't handle it coming from me, then you need to go somewhere else and I'll go somewhere else, right? And end the thing like that. But when, I don't think we're trained, you look at our education, right? I mean, I don't know about you, I wasn't had any business education. And as you're saying, there's a whole business side to this thing, isn't there, right? Where do you actually get that from? And I think that's what, you only get to become aware of it when you start to get to a certain scale and you realize, right, I need an organization to continue this thing I'm doing. Because if I want to do another project now, I need to have certain things in place. And then when you got to get the knowledge for that, the people that have got the knowledge, sometimes they're not you, they're not us, okay? All right, so they're talking about it, but it's like you think, oh, I might have the smooth ride you had through there, right? So where we become important is passing on that knowledge. It's saying to people, listen, you know, to young black people, saying, listen, right, there might be a certain amount of friction you're going to have to deal with, right? Extra friction. It's not fair, right? And frankly, if you want to hurt somebody, there's a reason you made me right to feel that way, right? So, but this is why this is happening, right? Mm-hmm. But the way around this, actually, is to start to sit down and think about your path in this thing. There is no point looking at how other people have done stuff. You know, other kind. You do need to look at other black people sometimes, all right? Mm-hmm. And go and talk to those people. And say, what happened there? How did you do that? You know, like, you know, you're talking about Castor now. I was surprised, you know, you said about how hard it. But the more I think about it, every time I see a black person put something out there, okay, there's always some kind of horror story. I'm sorry. But you know, a certain amount of effort and time that's gone behind it. But where do you see that represented anywhere? We see the success bit, right? But where do you see where people have sat down and said, you know what? To get that thing up there, I had to do X, Y, and Z. I mean, maybe what we need is something, a forum or something we work together where people can go to get this specific unique knowledge.
When I say that, I just have a little thing, yeah. Because we've just got some funding to create a Black Arts and Heritage Forum that we'll be doing in April next year. And it's all about that mentorship for funding, for business advice, networking on a basic level as well, but it's more about getting like those things that we need in the background together.
Yeah,
because I think, you know, it is really important. But anyway,
I think in terms of, so I think we have a role to play in that mentorship, that sharing of knowledge, and so on. But the responsibility, if you have a pot of money and you want to give it to people and you set the criteria, then surely if you want to reach wider audiences and take up, then the responsibility is yours to go listen to the stories, whether they're horror stories or great stories, the success stories, the ones that haven't worked out so much, the projects that have been funded, and to use those, whether it's as case studies, as real life examples, and to go out there into the places where you want to target as whatever funder and say, this is available. This is the kind of project that this might suit. This is who can apply. This is who can't apply. This is what we will fund. This is what we won't fund. And that's a starting point. It's not the whole, you know, it's not everything. But I think in terms of who is responsible, then who is responsible are the in terms of public funders, those are the ones who are responsible for doing that. But a good way to do it, and perhaps an effective way to do that, would be to work with people in the sector from, you know, black creatives, projects who have been successful, projects who have had a difficult time as well, to listen to that feedback. And I know that there are funders, I know the Heritage Fund have done this, you know, and, you know, certainly learnt from some of the feedback in our evaluation reports around, you know, does this project fit into this funding criteria and the reporting of it as well, because the reporting of it is a whole different thing. It's not just the applying to the funds. So I think the responsibility is with the funders, but the adding value to that and making it more effective is those of us who know and have the experience.
So a bit split. Okay. So where do we if we're thinking, just trying to think around this.
Can I just say something? Mm. The problem I have sometimes, like I've never read somewhere where people say, right, as a, I'll articulate it and just say, is that as a black person, you might not be taken seriously when you come with certain things, right? So you might be taken seriously if you say you want to talk about baseline, okay? Because it's music, people can make sense of that. But if you say you want to talk about art, for example, right? You want to talk about Thomas Gainsborough or something like that, right? And so on. That sometimes, actually, I don't see that written anywhere, where people say, right, these are the specific issues you're going to face. Maybe as a black man or as a black woman, because there's different dynamics we're talking about here, right? I've hardly ever seen that. Maybe see it on an angry blog somewhere in the middle of something, but I've never seen where it's like, it's outlined what it specifically means for us trying to do that thing and how it can affect you, you know, psychologically.
I think if you look at Sonia Boyce and, you know, the Black Arts of the 1990s,
yeah.
Eddie Chambers.
Yeah. Great guy, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keith Piper.
Yeah.
They really did bring that out. They really did target that this is an oppressive situation, society, whatsoever. And I think they continue to do that. If you look at their work, if you look at the conversations they're having, Sonia Boyce has just been at the Tate, looking at the works that's behind the scenes and what's been happening there, because clear off the back of they bought her work and it had never been shown. Yeah. It never come out.
Yeah.
So, which is what they do a lot of the time. They'll buy it and just put it in the thing so nobody's getting to see it.
Yeah.
So off the back of that, and I think, you know, Eddie Chambers, actually he's got a long history of where he's talking about it, because he's saying that I couldn't make it in this country, so I had to go to America.
Yeah.
With Keith Piper's work, you can just see the anger.
Yeah.
You can see the anger within what he is producing and the way it's coming across. Mm. So, and so I think there are many that are clearly voicing the way they feel and some of the things.
You hear the one side of it, which is these are the challenges I face to get there. But what sometimes I don't hear is, you know, the businessy side we're talking about here. Mm. The specific, because the business side is the bit that can take you down.
Yeah.
Because you can have like a really wonderful one project, which is wonderful. But you didn't pay attention to the money, the taxes and all the rest of it, right? You just didn't pay attention to that. So when you come to the next project, you're down, right? And then, or actually doing the project, you know, doing it, the doing of it, is that there might be extra challenges that you face. It's not a question, I'm not lamenting it, so you're not even angry about it. Say, look, this is the state of play that we're in now, right? Nobody wants to talk about it, right? Directly, a lot of the time. Or sometimes when it comes out, it doesn't come out in a form that we can just use, you know, like you could sit down and say, right, You know, you look at business books and things, here's 4 points you need to think about. And then I think, okay, what do I need to think about as a black person looking at this now? Right? Because there's some extra points in here that might be missing, right? That I actually need to think about in terms of money. You know, negotiating? Negotiating might be a different thing for me than other people. You know, negotiating to do something. Talking about the actual value of the thing. You know, that I'm, because sometimes it's within institutions, they may not see the value of what you're doing. You're not up front, right? So then it's being able to sit down and have a vision. And say, right, the reason why this thing is valuable is because, like the Castor project that you did there, right? It's because, right, this will change, literally, how we see art across the world. Western art, okay? Western art, right? So there's this vision, we can open a whole door for a whole new way of looking at art. Right, now that's harder to argue, that's quite difficult to argue with, but once you got past it, I think sometimes you just, people celebrate, you know? I've got the grant from da-da-da, right? But they don't think, right, okay, where are you going to be like in 5 years' time, right? How many people are you bringing on board, right? How many people are you developing around you? I keep mentioning Zita, right? Hi, Zita, right? But one of the things, like working with Zita Holborn, right? Anytime I'm doing something, I always try to think about people like Zita.
It was so strange that you told me, sorry to cut
you,
you told me, because we'd already contacted her and you turned around and went, oh, have you got Zita? Who was that?
Yeah, because what it is, sometimes you get this knowledge in informal conversations with people, you know, when you get deep with them, right? But there was I think what the difference is with African Americans, for example, right? That's what I saw. For whatever, maybe it's historical, they're together in a different way. So somebody might come up to you and say, listen, brother, did you ask for £100,000? Please tell me you said you asked for £100,000 and you didn't go in and just say you had a brilliant idea. And you're like, what are we talking about? So there's that more direct conversation. Whereas maybe it's because of the way we're spread out, because I feel like I should have known you guys a long time ago, right? A long time ago, because there's a lot of things that I've done sometimes where I think if I'd known you, I could have asked you a bit about that or know about it. But I think that's one of the things maybe we need to start developing in this country, you know?
It's a mechanism. It's quite true, but then I wonder how if that is the way that we promote ourselves, because like I'm saying, you've been one of the biggest fans, you know, like always commenting, oh, what you like, what we do, what... But I don't know who you were. So because you were interacting so much with us online, it was like, okay, who's this guy? Let me have a look.
Yeah.
So then I did a bit of research on who you were and what you'd done. Yeah. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But what was driving the interaction with you was what I was thinking to myself. These people do this wonderful stuff, right? Okay. And actually, I was thinking, because I have to watch what I do online now, because I realize that people can, I don't think about it, right? But what I was thinking is like, this: I need to contact, I have to find some way to contact you, right? But the reason why I was thinking like that is because I've been to America, and I've seen people work together there, and I realized, right, one thing I was told when I was over there is if you come across people, just work with them, right? Try and work with as many people as you can, right? Because if you don't work with as many people as you can, and it goes back to the first step about being a token, right? Being a token can be wonderful, right? Right? I don't know. I've been there. All right. I've been the guy, you know, in the room, you walk in. It's Gavin. Come in, Gavin. This is a really cool guy, man. Sit down, Gavin. Yeah? But you're the only one there. And sometimes you forget you're the only one there. And then the fashion changes, doesn't it?
Mm. I don't know. Down, I've never liked being the only one. If I'm in that door, I'm bringing a whole heap behind me. I can't be the only one. I can't. It's not good for me.
That's what we haven't.
I don't feel comfortable with that.
Don't want to be the first after so many years. Don't want to be the only one.
No.
That's why, like with funding and everything and relating to institutions, if there's more than one of you relating to an institution, there's a group of you. So if they say to you, like, note on something, yeah? Then I say, okay, actually, Zita's got something she's doing. She can look at. Or, you know, Tara's got something she's doing. She can look at. And I think those institutions look at you differently. But I think money is a matter of urgency, right? I think it's, I think we're getting to the point now. I'm having more and more conversations. You know what you just said there about what happened? The amount of time I've had, like, look, I don't want to come off as negative, right? But I want to come off as truthful. I think sometimes people say, if you're telling the truth, people say you're being negative. No, I'm just telling you what's going on. I'm just telling you what's happening. It's more, we need to have more open conversations about this. We need to talk about the people that have been successful. Need to start chatting and saying, listen, these are some of the challenges that I faced, right? Which you're not going to see anywhere else. And maybe it sounds questionable and crazy to a lot of people, right? Because you must have conversations where you feel out of your body, right? You realize, where am I? Because someone's asked you something, you're thinking, what kind of question is that? Why are you asking me that? And you had to, like, you know, you feel, you know, your blood pressure, you feel it going up, and you think, okay, I've got to control it. I've got to work out, realize this person does not understand the full thing. And then, but I think the thing about money, I think we just got to start learning to have a more upfront conversation about it.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
You know? I wonder if there's also something to be said. I know that funding is money. I know it is. But it's that deeper thing as well about the partnerships that we've already spoken about, but also the legacy of the projects in particular that they're funding and how they can have a lasting impact. Are there elements in there of artist development, of engaging young people, of the different platforms that might be used as well, and that strengthen funding bids and so on? Because it might work in a different way than when we're applying for project funding to say right, I want £100,000. You have to justify every single budget line, and you know it's going to be clear if things are amped up for the sake of amping them up. They have to be reasonable and, you know, based on, you know, fair rates of pay for artists, for example, and so on. And I think that, you know, those are the things that people need to be knowing and understanding and so on. I just think that whole legacy and impact that you were speaking about in terms of the evaluation and the feedback and so on is so hugely important in getting the next generation and so on on board.
Not to go too deeply, but is funding something that you think you might need to do in the future? And if so, why is it not part of what you do?
I would say...
I ask you that because I'd say out of all of us, your voice is probably the loudest.
What's interesting in this conversation is that I've had a little bit of experience, as I shared, and that has somewhat given me a little bit of PTSD in regards to acquiring funding.
Yeah.
But because of having a platform in terms of numbers, now when if I were to ever think of funding, so one of the ideas and one of the projects that I do want to work on would be creating a Black History / Notting Hill Carnival space where the history is evident, the history is there. If you're attending, you have to walk past and see who all these are. So it's something that I'm working on, and I've already done my pitch deck and I'm talking to Notting Hill Carnival about it. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but it definitely will happen next year. But I give you that to say, in regards to funding, as I mentioned to these two off camera, I read a book called Black Labour, White Wealth, that's written in the 1940s, and it's written by an African-American guy called Claude Anderson. And one thing that he speaks about in that book is cultural capital. So anytime I've ever thought about funding, I'm always thinking about who are the powerful people within my community that could potentially fund what I'm doing. So I say that to say I've never thought about bid writing or things of that nature because of the relationships that have been built through having people follow me on social media, be they a notable figure, an actor, a celebrity, an athlete, whoever it may be. When they get in contact with me and say, what do you need? I then have the opportunity, through reading that book, I can then say to them, well, actually, you know, this theorist says that cultural capital and one of the things that we need to do in order to make what we're doing sustainable is, and I do understand your point of some of that money is public money and some of it is ours, but in terms of, you know, making sure that there are people within our community that do want to help, but let's say they're detached because they're not on the ground. So when they do find people whose voices are loud online and they're able to kind of connect with grassroots people, because often what ends up happening, you've got grassroots and then you've got, you know, notable high network people that aren't on the ground, is a big disconnect. And you know, as you kind of get more popular, obviously they become aware of you. So I say that to say I've never thought about funding or bid writing, but when I have started to think about it, I'm approaching my network, who so happen to have a net worth.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's how
makes sense.
That's how I see it. And hopefully what I would see for our generations is, as Black British people, as we become and have more cultural capital in terms of wealth within this country, because our trajectory is only going up in terms of, if you think about our boxers, for example, Anthony Joshua is the person that has managed to acquire the most sponsorship and money. So it's not necessarily about success as a boxer, which I know nothing about, but in terms of success, in terms of monetary, he has attained the most financially. Or if you look at Lewis Hamilton or any of these kind of football players that we have now they have really big net worths. So now it's about, for me, when it comes to funding, yes, there's the public side that we're owed, but also it's about connecting that Black labor, white wealth, Black labor, Black wealth. So it's about us gaining contact with those people and being like, no, actually, this is something you need to be interested in because your grandparents or your parents are actually from the Windrush generation. So it makes sense for you to input into what we're doing because it's actually about your legacy and your culture. And we can actually spotlight you in a different way that the other medias won't spotlight you. So those are kind of the conversations that I think about when it comes to funding. And Notting Hill Carnival, for me, how can that operate without a Black history space?
Exactly.
How has it happened all that time without a space where it could be like, listen, there's Claudia Jones, there's Ronnie, there's Russ, there's all these people that have inputted over the years, and then sound systems were brought in, and mass means these feathers and stuff means masquerade and mass and da da.
Got contacts with Leslie.
So it's just like, you know, all of these people, and you know, we're coming from Caribbean heritage, Caribbean culture, and it naturally makes sense for us to input into that pot and that kitty in order to make sure that the legacy lives. Otherwise it's on the decline.
Yeah.
It's not even my opinion, statistically.
It's on the decline.
So we have to be louder. If we're not louder, then it's going to get quieter, and then Notting Hill Carnival will become carny. The same way how Ibiza is beefer. It will just become something that you know, has a nickname and then the history is removed and then that's it.
And anybody can create a festival of feathers and sequins.
Yeah, exactly.
I think in terms of the funding, that's absolutely valid and really strong point about differentiating between applying for funding, as in public funding, and what you're saying about philanthropy as well, and trusts and foundations. I think they're different approaches, and then sponsorship as well, which is, you know, around corporate social responsibility and so on. So there are different ways of approaching them all. And it's, you know, whether you look at a mixed model of income and how that might work. And I think, you know, that high net worth, you know, the celebrities, the, you know, the folks in the city, the others as well. That's, you know, that I think it's great, you know, that from your perspective of not being drawn into that public funding world where we almost become reliant on that. And I think it's great to look at that as a mixed model approach of economy.
And you know what I would say, which I think is actually quite interesting. I don't know if I'm speaking for my generation or just for me, but perhaps the public funding bit is because I simply don't know how to do it. I wouldn't know where to go. Yeah. I don't know who the people, and I would just see it as very like arduous and quite hard quite. Whereas obviously the philanthropy side, which you so eloquently put in regards to breaking down the differences, just seems a lot smoother and easier if you already have that connection there.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I do believe that they all need to exist in a space in regards to kind of, and I think pave the way for future generations.
And public funding, it's inevitable that it's going to come under even more pressure in the times that we're living in, so we do need to be looking at, you know, in those
and even if it's just a little catalyst in regards to, you know, getting philanthropy to show that actually there's eyes on having a history space in Notting Hill Carnival, because 2 million people are passing by. That's
absolutely
the best black marketing you could ever
have,
and then maybe it can then transfer and you know, from there be a rolling effect and then start to get sponsorships and different things of that nature.
Absolutely.
But initially that spark I think should come from our communities.
Wow, I like that. So I think we've kind of exhausted that a little bit.
I think so.
I feel like I would love, you know, I must say, I'd not thought about going to the stars and, you know, like the people that are around. It's not something, you know, when I'm thinking of
a path right now.
You know, I'm thinking about sponsorships, you know, if it's either the funding or it's sponsorships, or I hadn't thought to reach out to black icons.
And think about those
spaces. It's really interesting. And think about those spaces and understand.
That's interesting, because I have reached out to some sometimes.
Sometimes.
They're always glad when you reach out. They're always like over the moon, right? I found, because I'm not going to mention any names, okay? Well, for example, Lenny Henry, right? Because where one of the places I work, Celeste Hammersmith, he was doing a play there, which was part of that. I think it was that, you know, TV series. So there was a play version
of it.
But he didn't
get funding for
that. I just sent him an email. I sent him an email saying, oh, I'm thinking blah, 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 blah. I got a response really quickly. Right? And he's like, da, da, da. And I remember, like, years ago, I spoke to Zadie Smith, right, about something. And she actually said to me, you know, black people don't approach me.
Oh, I do approach them, but to be part of projects, not to be to say, oh, do you know what, we could really do with some funding or something.
No, but you see, if you leave it open, sometimes I've just left it open and just said, you know, can you contribute whatever? And sometimes I've been like, offered stuff, right? And just thought, I couldn't place what to do with it at that time. So I've said to them, you know what, hold on to that, okay? And then if I circle back around onto it. But I think a lot of black celebrities would be just glad to be approached. Right, so that their legacy can be seen in a different way, and a bit of them can be acknowledged, because they, you know, we see them as black celebrities on TV, but there are bits of their identity that kind of they can't acknowledge it, right? Okay, because it doesn't make sense to.
No, I was going to say, and then also as well, they have power to that match funding, so often they can go to one of their sponsors and say, "I'm putting this, can you match it?" And it's going to this, and that's also quite helpful as well, because they've got leverage within the community, within the institutions and spaces that they're in.
And then, I mean, like, there's a writer I know, quite famous, right? But actually, sometimes, because I know him, he'll put me in contact with other celebrities and say, go and talk to this person. Because, you know, people go through different stages in their life and everything. So he'll say, talk to this celebrity now, because they're open to this right now. because this is happening in their life. But you know, I think you're totally right. You know, there is something that in America they do think about it though. Actually, right, okay, it's just like right, but that's where we're slightly behind here, because. we're slightly behind it, but I think it goes back to what I said about the culture of money and asking for money and things like that. It's over here, it's not something you just, you know, can I have £50,000? There's that thing where you're like, the man's talking about money. Did you mention money, sir? Yeah, it's like, right.
But that's where I feel like the skills come in handy, because if you do have the bid skills to write proposals and it's airtight, and then you can bring it to a high net worth individual, they know that you're a serious somebody.
Yeah. Something will have to be written.
Yeah, okay, something
you can't
will
just
have to
be written. Yeah, say, yeah, right, give us 20 grand and then just wire it to you. Something will have to be written. And a proposal, you know, should be detailed, and it should demonstrate what the benefits are on both sides and what the returns are. So in some way, there's going to be some kind of bid, isn't there? Whether it's a sponsorship bid, whether it's one to a philanthropic cause, or whether it's to a funding body that's publicly funded, there's going to have to be some kind of bid.
100%. Yeah. And I think that's important to kind of hone in on, because we don't want it just to seem like, you know, they're a bank or an ATM.
Yeah,
or
no, something that's all. Yeah, absolutely.
Of that nature, yeah.
Well, actually, in terms of like cultural capital, that sometimes that's what they bring into the project as well. Because let's be honest, if there's certain celebrities that are connected to something or their name is on there, it does make a hell of a difference, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're just asking for the money. Yeah. We're saying, look, there is element of us working together on something, and actually your name meaning more than what it means now to people. So some people might see Anthony Joshua just as a boxer, right? But if he's involved in projects like what you're talking about, they'll start to see him differently. Yeah. All right. And actually we as black people in this country might be taken a bit more seriously actually. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, hang on, these people actually, you know, you can see their history in more places. Like, and I love this thing about the carnival, because I think it has been decoupled. To a certain extent, I feel that. I'm not having to go at the organizers or anything, because I know they've done a phenomenal job. But it's like, you know, over the years, sometimes I sit down and just think to myself, you know, really, all of the like black celebrities in this country, particularly with Caribbean heritage, we should all be working around that in some way.
I think London has lost its thing, but Leeds doesn't. Leeds is still going down. Leeds is about the culture.
It's good to have, because one thing that I always say, and this is what I say to my friends who are of predominantly Nigerian West African heritage, is that to read the signs, as in look at the precursor. So to look at Leeds Carnival and then to look at Notting Hill Carnival and see perhaps things that you don't, routes that you don't want it to go down. And similarly to my West African friends, it's like, you know, once you've assimilated into British culture for a while, you see it with the Caribbean people, this potentially is what can happen. You know, your ethnicity can be declining, you know, it could be harder to then kind of get together and things of that nature. So always using it as a precursor.
Totally, but Leeds isn't a precursor, because Leeds is
the same time.
The
I'm saying as a precursor. Yeah, I'm saying a precursor. Yeah, so I know in terms of history, not a precursor, but I'm talking about a precursor as in, as in like being able to viably see something that's existing alongside you and see historically what has happened. I'm talking about a precursor historically, not in terms of it happened before.
Not that long before.
Bit of an argument.
Leeds is the first outdoor carnival, whereas Notting Hill was the first carnival, but it was indoor.
And it's, are we still recording?
I think
it's
assumed so.
We've gone off subject. So I'll just close it up. So again, a wonderful conversation with you guys. I hope that we kind of, I'm not sure we've answered the questions, but we have gone round it and developed an understanding of what it is and maybe how we move forward and some of the things that we can do to really guide the ones coming up behind us on some of the outcomes we can use to gain more funding and to be more supportive to each other. So thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to coming back for part four.
We don't answer to no more. Oh.